We're going to talk about something tonight which we are surrounded with, souls that are lost. And we just need to ask the question, how does Jesus view them? Well, we know how he views them because he died for them. And he has given us everything we need for these people not to be lost. And yet they choose, some of them choose to be lost, some of them are deceived into being lost, and some don't really care that they're lost. And so that's what we have to deal with. And Luke 19:10 says, "For the Son of Man has come to seek and save that which was lost." I mean, so that's what his purpose here is to do. Now, in Luke 15:4-7, Jesus saying, "What man among you, if it has 100 sheep and has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open pasture and go after the one which is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost.' I tell you that in the same way, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance." All right, so, I mean, we're supposed to learn from these scriptures, so let's see what we can learn. See, apparently this person was lost by reason of ignorance or stupidity. And when we start talking about sheep, the latter seems to be appropriate for sheep. But anyway, as we see, it lost their leader. I mean, sheep get busy sometimes. They start chomping away on the grass, and they don't pay attention to what's going on around them. Everybody else just takes off and leaves, and they may still sit there chomping on the grass. And then all of a sudden they look up, And several things, they don't know which way to go, because sheep are traditionally followers. I mean, you've watched the herds and the flocks out there in the field, and they're all going one way, then all of a sudden one said, "Hey, that looks like a good patch of grass," starts walking that way, and they all just kind of follow that. Kind of like a flock of birds. I mean, they're going along, you think they're going straight path, then all of a sudden they're off going off that way. Then they're going another way. And they really don't know which way to go unless they have someone guiding them, which is the purpose of a shepherd or a sheepdog or an animal that's trained to guide them in the right direction. And so apparently this person was lost, didn't even know they were lost, they just weren't paying attention. And that describes many people in the world today. They're just not paying attention to what's going on. And so, and it gets to the point, they cannot find their own way. They need to be guided, they need to be led. And so they can't find their own way, at least not on their own. Whether it's intentional or unintentional, they just cannot find their way. It's not cooperating. All right. And the problem is, they may not have realized that they were lost. They didn't know they were lost. I mean, they didn't know where they were, they didn't know where they was going, they didn't know where they were supposed to go, and they didn't even know they were lost. And so we recognize that there's many people in this category of lost souls. All right, now when we jump down to verses 8 through 10, he has another story. "Or what woman, if she has 10 silver coins and loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and search carefully until she finds it? And when she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin which I had lost.' And in the same way, I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents." All right, when we start looking about this and looking at this story, we see that actually the one coin that was gone means it was performing no service. I mean, the woman was sure it was in the house. That's why she cleaned the house looking for it. But it is useless while it's there. Sometimes we might decide, well, I'm going to put something off in a safe place and I'll get it later. And guess what? We forget where that safe place is. And what use is that to us at the time? So, no, it's of no use to us whatsoever if it's hiding somewhere in an envelope or in a drawer somewhere. It's of no service to us. We cannot use it. And so this is describing a lost soul. They're of no service to God. And so if one loses money, they search tirelessly for it until they find it. As long as they know they have it, okay, it's somewhere, I got to remember where I put it. And so they're going to search for it until they find it. And why was that? Because, like I said, the money has value to them. It can do certain things for them that no money won't be able to do. So why does a soul not have as much value? And we ask that question about people's souls. Why do they not put any value upon their soul? I mean, they put more stock in football. They put more stock in politics. They put more investment into their pleasures and their way of living. They don't spend any time working on their soul to make sure it's going to be safe. And so the soul does not have value to a lot of people. But when we ask the question, how valuable is a soul? I mean, God paid a price. He sent his son to die on the cross for that soul. And so when it's lost, it's really useless for any good purpose. And so the thing about this is these are not lost by their own doing. They are lost because someone misplaced them by negligence or got them on the wrong path by false teaching. One way or the other. I mean, even if they might be claiming to be evangelists, if they're teaching error, then they're still lost. And so that's one thing. And it really wasn't their own fault. Someone misled them, misused them, misguided them, and they're really not helpful to the master at all. And when we read the next story, the prodigal son. Yes, we remember this story, beginning verse 11. And he said, a certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the estate that falls to me. And he divided his wealth between them. And not many days later, the younger son gathered everything together and went on a journey into a distant country. And there he squandered his estate with loose living. Now, when he had spent everything, a severe famine occurred in that country, and he began to be in need. And he went and attached himself to one of the citizens of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he was longing to fill his stomach with the pods that the swine were eating, and no one was giving anything to him. But when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men have more than enough bread, but I am dying here with hunger? I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired men. And he got up and came to his father, but when he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion for him and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his slaves, quickly bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fatted calf, kill it and feed us, eat and be merry. For this son of mine was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found. And they began to be merry. So that's what we see here. We see this person made the choice to rebel, and selfishness got a hold of him. Of course, we know selfishness is the number one cause of sin of any sort. And so people who do their own thing are guilty of selfishness, and sometimes they do it because of rebellion. Sometimes they do, well, because God said so, I'm just going to do the opposite, or I'm going to do something else. And so that is rebellion. I mean, God tells us just plain and simple, this is what I want from you. And they turn around and say, well, we're not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. Just like they did in the days of Jeremiah. And so this person decided, he chose his own path and ended up with the pigs as roommates. I mean, he got into very deplorable condition. And so, I mean, being around pigs was bad enough. I mean, actually serving the pigs and feeding the pigs, I mean, that was probably the lowest insult a Jew could even tolerate, if they could even tolerate it. That's the worst thing they could do. They weren't even allowed to touch them or eat them or anything like that. But luckily, as some have, he came to his senses. And of course, many are not as fortunate. Many just keep going off their loss. They're doing their own thing, and they really don't care to get back to where they should be in the good graces of God. And so many are not as fortunate as this person. I mean, he hit the bottom of the barrel. He says, I've got to get out of this. I've got to make changes. Now we continue the story in beginning verse 25. All right. Now his older son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. And he summoned one of the servants and began inquiring what these things might be. And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has received him back safe and sound. But he became angry and was not willing to go in, and his father came out and began entreating him. But he answered and said to his father, look, for so many years I have been serving you, and I have never neglected a command of yours, and yet you have never given me a kid that I might be merry with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your wealth, and with harlots you killed the fatted calf for him. And he said to him, my child, you have always been with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to be merry and rejoice, for this brother of yours was dead and has began to live and was lost and has been found. I mean, so you see an attitude here that we understand here. So this person gave the appearance of being faithful, like a lot of people that go to church. They give the appearance of being faithful. I mean, sometimes, if they walk in the door, well, there's a faithful Christian, and we seem to get that idea, and that's the problem here. But their heart is sour, and this man's heart was sour. He said, I did all this work. I worked my tail off for you, and now you're giving him a feast, and you never did that for me? I mean, that's selfishness when you come to think of it, and so he was lost and didn't know it. Nobody knew he was lost. I mean, here he was, the faithful son, always behaving like he was supposed to, as a good son would do, and his heart was sour and he was lost. Just like a lot of people who come to church, but yet, not being able to read hearts, we may not know if their heart is sour, if their heart is bent on something else, if they're just here trying to make a show. I mean, we just don't know those things. And so that's why we need to spend time with people to get to know them better. And even his own father did not realize this. His own father did not realize how bitter he had become. And so he expressed disfavor for the return of a lost soul. I mean, how many people do you know that? Somebody came back after being lost, and we should be rejoicing. But all they do is pick on him. Oh, sorry, person, he shouldn't have come back, blah, blah, blah. I mean, there's attitudes expressed sometimes by Christians that exhibit the same attitude as the older brother. And they're lost. I mean, they may be here every time the doors are open, sitting there listening to the message and singing the songs, but they are just as lost as the person who is out there away from God. And they don't know it. In this case, it was his own brother. That should have brought him much joy. Yes, he was lost. He squandered his life. He made mistakes. He did wrong, but he is back. He's back where he needs to be. And sometimes people just do not like it when someone comes back. So, his actions were an act of selfishness, and selfishness is always sin. There's no question about that. All right, Jesus makes a plan that he is the sinner's friend. He makes it plain. He is the sinner's friend, and he died on the cross for everyone. And Jesus said, the best thing anyone can do is to lay down their life for another. And Jesus said, I lay down my life. And he died for all. I mean, it was his choice. Yes, it was God's plan that he die on the cross. But Jesus knew full well when he came, this was going to be the end result. This was what was going to happen in the end. He died for all. And Jesus is always, forever seeking their recovery. When people turn their way, when people never obey, he's always seeking for them to be recovered from their lost state. That means obeying the gospel and having their sins washed away, becoming a child of God, added to the church, or if they have fallen away, to get them to recover and come back. And then, sadly, for those who are in sin and don't know it, he's hoping that the message, whatever message might be, will be enough to get them to change their ways. What he does tell us is in heaven there is great joy when one is found and returns to the Lord. That should be a great joy should come over us when that happens. The same kind of joy when one person obeys the gospel. We just get so excited and we're so happy for that individual. I mean, when they acknowledge, I have sinned and ask for forgiveness. We know God is forgiving them. We should also, if they did something perhaps to us. And so, we should rejoice when one returns who is lost. And so, if we're going to return to the Lord, it has to be intentional. It's not going to happen by mistake. It's not going to be for this person who has turned their back on God for so many years, just kind of sneak in the back door and just kind of sit there a while. And that's not going to cut it. I mean, if they know that they've done wrong, they need to ask for forgiveness. And sometimes, yes, if people don't know it, they can go to God in prayer. Jesus said, go into your home in the inner room or your closet and pray, because God is there waiting on you. But yet, if our sin has been such that it's caused harm to the name of Christ or to the reputation of the church, then yes, we need to confess before our brethren and ask and beg their forgiveness. And so, I mean, if someone sins against you and not sin against me, then okay, they ask for forgiveness. Well, it might be easier for me to forgive them since they didn't sin against me. It'd be a lot harder for you to forgive them. And so, yes, we've all been there. We've all been harmed. We've been mistreated. We have been, people have treated us horribly at times just because of our stand for the truth. And we just have to be willing to forgive them and let it go. Now we make the choice to obey him. We make the choice to obey God, and that's what we need to do. And really, the choice to obey God, I mean, depending on whatever your condition is. If you're lost, you need to obey God. If you're lost, and then if you were found and then lost again, you still need to obey him. And that's what we need to do. So without that obedience, nothing can save us. I mean, the grace of God doesn't save us if we're not willing to be obedient to God. I mean, the fact that Jesus died on the cross does not save us unless we're willing to obey the gospel and the teachings that he gives us. So that's a lesson, a very simple lesson, but we're supposed to learn from these lessons. So that's it. And so these four souls, kind of a representation of all lost souls. And we find that all in one chapter. So think about those things. That's our lesson. We're going to sing the invitation song. If anyone needs to respond, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.